everybody. Welcome to a very special one-on-one edition of the Latin Babbler Show. If you're trying to figure out what's wrong with your screen, there's nothing wrong. Two bald Rafaels inside one show. Nothing can go wrong. Let's get this going. Levantaré mi bandera, estando en mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí mira no existen fronteras. Yo levantaré mi bandera, whoa. Levantaré mi bandera, estando en mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí mira no existen fronteras. No, no, Y es que hay mucho sentimiento, lo grito al viento, de ser latino nunca me arrepiento. Lo digo desde la Suiza, Centroamericana, rebota en Colombia y en Dominicana y yo.
All right, and welcome back. My guest is an award-winning writer from the CW show, Jane the Virgin, the CEO of the Latino Film Institute, where he oversees the Youth Cinema Project, the Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival, my favorite film festival, and the Latinx Imagination. He was named one of the 50 most essential people in LA by LA Weekly, and is the author of the best-selling comedic memoir, Illegally Yours. He now has a Spanish version, Ilegalmente Tuyo, La Comedia de Mi Vida, which is coming out Tuesday on June the 19th. There's a lot to say, man. Like, you have so many credentials. I have to show will go if I go through all of them. So
listen, I'm an overachiever. What can I say?
But welcome, Rafael Agustin. What's up, man?
Okayo, thank you for having me. It's so great to be here.
So you and I met at La Leaf. I went there last year. We got the privilege of covering it through a mutual friend. They invited us to go there. We were again there this year. We interacted a couple of times. What was your thought on this year's La Leaf?
It was fantastic. You know, from the inside, it kind of doubled in size. It doubled in programming and sponsorship and audience attendance. It keeps growing every year. So it's finally what we had hoped it would become, you know, because I don't know if you know this. You know, that Leaf has been around for over two decades.
Yeah.
And when we first started, because it is an international Latino film festival, so much of the programming at the beginning used to be just international films, because we had like the best films from Brazil, from Mexico, from Argentina. So how does the U.S. Latino compete against that, right?
Yeah, that's tough.
It took us a while for the U.S. Latino to be elevated in their artistry and their storytelling to finally compete. So when I took over, I want to say like 8 years ago, my focus was, okay, how do we support the U.S. Latino? Like, we don't have the resources and we don't have like the subsidies that our Latin American countries are giving these international Latino filmmakers. So we were hoping that the Latino Film Institute, which was founded by Edward James Olmos, could bridge that gap.
How did you get in? I was going to use this later on in a second, but since we're on this, how did you even get involved? Because I know you volunteered there.
My brother, I started as a student volunteer. I was going to UCLA at the time. And I remember Edward James Olmos came and spoke at my school, and I was so inspired, but I didn't like pull the trigger. I didn't go to the festival just yet. And then I don't know if you remember the late and great Lupe Ontiveros.
Sí.
She was in El Norte, you know, she was in Selena, and she came into my class and she was like, listen, La Leaf is where the Latino community and the Hollywood industry intersect. And I was like, that's exactly what I'm looking for. I'm looking for my community. I'm looking for my industry. And I was like, this woman killed Jennifer Lopez and Selena. I should do what she says. And then I showed up.
Can she walk the streets as an actress? That's a bigger question.
Exactly. Yolanda, the audio.
Just think they picture it.
So then that's how I started. She inspired me to go. And I was hooked, man, at the quality in filmmaking, but more importantly, the other volunteers were so inspiring to me because they were people like me just trying to make it in the industry.
Yeah.
And here is like a story I don't think I've shared much. One of the first people I met while I was like production coordinator, I can't even remember what I was doing at the time, was a young actress by the name of Gina Rodriguez. Like she was at La Leaf with her first film, trying to make it in Hollywood. We were both just young Latinos trying to make it, and we became friends and we stayed in touch. And next thing you know, she's Golden Globe winner, star of Jane the
Virgin. Yeah, no kidding.
And and I have to say, I'm sure that supported and helped my being selected to be a staff writer. I mean, obviously I became a Sundance Fellow. Obviously I sold a TV show and I had the skills and I had the resume, but so many of us do. And I have a feeling that having known Gina on that personal level kind of helped me get into the writer's room.
I like this quote because it actually goes with what Ali stands for. It says, there are people in my community more talented than me who weren't able to rise up. It's such a powerful quote because for me, La Leaf meant that to me when I went there the first year. Y cuando yo vine para atrás from this time around, I felt like, almost felt guilty because I had been using my voice incorrectly.
Wow.
For Latino arts, you know what I'm saying? Like I felt like I wasn't doing my people as big as a service as I should be doing based on what I was seeing at the screen. And I know you and I talked about, you know, my favorite was like Patria y Vida, you know, The Power of Music. And my review is going to go out for that. And, you know, I hope, you know, to share that for people to be able to get that, you know, as much as possible, because that film really needs to just get out there. But for me, La Leaf is something that is, it redefines what representation is in our community. And it's amazing that you guys are, you know, have created such a festival that has, I guess you can say, given a voice to a lot of people, like you were saying in the quote, that just didn't have one before. And that's amazing.
Thank you so much for highlighting that, my brother, because to me, because I'm a TV writer and film writer by trade. That's actually what I do. And I know that we have the talent, right? There's a false narrative that, oh, Latinos aren't ready for the opportunities. I was like, no, you're wrong. The talent is there. What we don't have is access to funding. And we don't have access to little access to the industry. So that's what we're hoping to bridge with La Leaf, with the Youth Cinema Project, with the Latino Film Institute. And I hope to God that I can hand that off to somebody real soon, because I'm busy doing my work too, you know.
Yeah,
my TV shows that I'm developing and my books that I'm publishing. So,
I want to talk about the book,
village, but it also takes a village to do the leadership.
Hey, I see you and Edward James Olmos, you know, who I had the pleasure of interviewing. This man, every single time I talk to him, it resonates wisdom and accountability, because he's going to hold you to a standard no matter at what level you are. And his experience alone is enough to be just a guiding light to whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. So I hope whoever you pass it down to, though, has the same charisma, because I see you working that floor, man. This guy's like a game show host. He's like a ring bearer. If you haven't seen Rafael at La Leaf, you have to go. He doesn't stop. The man is left. And when you go say hi to him left, he's already on the right. Like,
why are you going to put me on blast like that, man?
It's hilarious, though. But it's amazing to see, because I feel like we introduced you to Didi Chacon, who was one of our interns. And for me, just the opportunity that you gave her to just even connect, you're giving that to, there's not a person that you miss in the room, is what really impresses me about how passionate you are, you know, when you're at La Leaf and you can see what you're doing and what Mr. Olmos is doing. So much credit to you, man.
I 100% learned that from him. When I was a volunteer, he took the time to speak to us. He took the time to see me, to thank me personally. I'm like, this, the only Mexican-American to be nominated for an Oscar for Best Actor is taking the time to talk to me. I'm a volunteer. So I never forgot that. And pay it forward, right? You have to pay it forward. And more importantly, like, there's so many people there that make the festival so special. And I want them to know that I see them and that they are appreciated. Listen, we don't have the millions of dollars we don't have like the funding that a Sundance has.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, this is a cultural thing. We have the heart, man.
People who come
to our festival are always like, man, I look forward to La Leaf because you just feel the warmth and you feel welcomed, and there's so much heart in this festival. And
I hope it's definitely yours. Like, you feel like you're home when you're at La Leaf. And I've been to quite a few festivals, you know, throughout the last couple of years. And I always wait for that one, because it's like, it's one for me that I'm just like, okay, we get to go back. Like, whose story do we get to tell? What experience did we see this year? Like, what do we learn? And so, yeah, truly amazing.
I love what you do, bro, is people don't realize that people are chasing the superstar, right? People don't mm-hmm. realize that you have the next superstar here. And you actually talk to everybody.
Look, when I spoke to my team going into this festival, I literally told them, I was like, look, when you're sitting there and you're looking at a film and you're reviewing, you could be seeing the next Selma Hayek or James Edward, Edwards Olmos. You could be in the room with the next Eva Longoria. So don't ever, think that you're going in there just to see a short film.
Yeah.
Because the person who created that could be, the next Fede Alvarez, or you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just for me, like, it's amazing. You're so right about that. It's so intentional to go into these festivals, understanding that the person that you're in there, their creativity is unmatched. It's one of the reasons why they're on that screen. It's insane.
And thank you for being a part of it this year, man. That was awesome. It was an awesome.
I enjoyed it. I don't want to talk about the book because you created a Spanish version now.
Yeah, it comes out this coming Tuesday.
Why did you decide to flip it? And we'll get into some of the key points of the book, but why did you decide to flip it so that we have el lenguaje de nosotros, so that it was it more for people who didn't have the reach of be able who were still not in the English side of the map?
Well, for me and everything that I do, including in film and TV, it's about redefining what Latino and Latinidad is. I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking when you say Latino, you're talking Spanish.
Yeah.
But I'm like, so many of us only speak English. And if you want to hit the general market, you got to go in English. So when I wrote this book, I wanted to make sure it was in English. And I also want to point out, I wanted to make sure it was a comedy. Because I've read a few memoirs and novels about the undocumented experience that was so... They're more serious, but a little
too raw.
Yeah, and then I'm like, but who is it for? Who's reading this? And I didn't want to do that. My background from Jane the Virgin, I was like, I'll write the male version of Jane the Virgin who happens to be undocumented. That's how I wrote it. And it worked. It's resonating with so many people. And more important, it's resonating with people who don't even care or want to hear about the topic. They're like, it was just well written, or it's just really funny, man.
I think a lot of it has to do with the messenger, though, because I think that a lot of people understand that. I mean, your family, your parents came. You guys all came from Ecuador. Yeah. Your parents were doctors.
Yeah.
You guys came here in the 80s. I have to first ask you, what was that journey like?
My brother. I came when I was 7 years old, straight to Los Angeles. It was 1988, so the Dodgers won the World Series. The Lakers won.
Oh, wow.
The NBA championship. Guns N' Roses was the biggest band in the world. And I was like, LA's the place to be. And, I was 7 years old, oblivious to what was going on. When we came, it was the 4th of July weekend. And I thought the fireworks were there just to, like, announce our arrival.
To welcome you?
Yes, America, I have arrived. That's like,
that he was came my in world. All his glory.
Yeah, that was my world. But the crux of the book acknowledges that I grew up an oblivious all-American kid. Like, my parents didn't tell me the truth of our legality. Like, I knew I was an immigrant. I didn't know I was an undocumented immigrant. Yeah. And not until in high school, not until like I started applying to go to college, applying to get jobs, applying, to get a driver's license. That is when I like the truth.
Yours is like your way of finding out is very telenovela, bro. It's like lo que la vida me robó type shit. Like
los ricos también lloran.
Like you went to get a license, and that's how. Like, at what point did your parents sit you down and sit there and say, "By the way, the reason you're having an issue is"?
Well, I gotta tell you, like, it's more common than you think. Like, the more the dreamers in particular read the book, they go, "That's how I found out, or that's what happened to me." So many discover the truth of their legality while they're applying to go to college.
Really? And, I didn't know that. That's crazy. That,
yeah. And then with, I tell people it was like sitting down with your parents to have a talk about the birds and the bees, but instead of that, it was about Uncle Sam and my parents. Here's the thing. They never said, because my parents speak Spanish, and they never said, somos ilegales, dun, dun, dun. It was never that.
Yeah, it was never one of those.
It was always like, no tenemos papeles. So I was like, all right, we don't have papers. Let's just go get papers. But it wasn't until like the driver's license stuff and applying to college when I was like, wait a minute. We don't have paper means.
That's like, an issue. Like that. Like, that's an issue, though.
That means like I'm illegal the way Lou Dobbs is saying on CNN. Okay, I didn't know. And
that's
that was
insane. Like,
and that was a whole nother reckoning. Cause back then, this was before the Dreamer movement, man. I wasn't undocumented and unafraid. I was very afraid. I thought I was the only one in the world. And I didn't have a language for what I was going through. I internalized the word illegal because that's all I heard in the news. That's all I heard teachers and people around me say. It would be years before I realized that that was the wrong terminology and I could actually refer to myself as undocumented. And in fact, when I look back at my life, I always like to point out to people that I was an undocumented American because I don't care what anyone says. We were American. We did provide. We did do our part in this system. And I always like to just point out that, you know, we make our economy stronger. We make
big time.
Our workforce younger. We make our music and food taste so much better. And my parents in particular, this is so crazy. My dad, an undocumented immigrant, he always insisted on paying and filing his taxes because he said, like, one day I'm going to speak to Uncle Sam or whoever, and I want them to know that I did everything by the book.
Yeah, everything he had to do. And by the way, that statistic for people, $2.1 trillion. Let's not, not pretend like we don't do our shit.
And it was, and it was in high school when I'm taking American history class, when I was like, wait, hold on. The American Revolution was founded under the idea that there can't be taxation without representation. And yet that's what this country does to so many undocumented workers today. And that's when my head was like, oh my God, this is such a hypocrisy, such a great irony.
I got a quote that you put in that book hits on immigration is right here. Immigrants, especially undocumented immigrants, have this abusive relationship with America. It says, we love this country so much and it just won't love us back. But we're going to stay and take the abuse and hope that one day America will see the error of its ways. Rafael, where do you come up with this? Because I'm looking at that quote and everything that we do here at Todo Wafi is really about representation. One of the reasons that we started this channel from this podcast was specifically designed to make sure that we give a voice to a lot of the Latino community that just didn't have one. The artist that's just rising up, you know, the local vendor. We just put up a post about what our local vendors and supporting it and so forth. For you, when you make a statement like that, where do you see, like, where we are on this topic of undocumented immigrants and la lucha that we have to kind of keep going over and over? No politician seems to be fixing this. So what do you feel when we're talking about this?
Well, first, you were like, what do you see? I was like, I see my ex-girlfriend because I was in a toxic relationship. And then I was it feels like the United States in me. I'll tell you the truth. And this is what breaks my heart is when I finally became a citizen, my first vote was for President Obama. And then to see him play politics with our community really broke my heart. You know, that idea that I will be tougher on immigration and deportation so that so that the other side can come over and pass comprehensive immigration reform, and then it didn't pass. So then he was he decided to become a tyrant on one end and didn't get what he wanted on the other. Yep. I'll pay my respects to the previous president because he did a lot of great stuff, but when, on immigration, he did fail us. And it was actually the undocumented student movement that forced him to pass DACA. And that is where my hope lies. It lies on the young activists of this nation versus the traditional immigration lobbyists who are just really, really like, a lot of people are making money. Let me put it this way.
Yeah. But it's not being
that. And that's what's pissing me off because now they're just playing politics with our community. And that has got to change. And we have got to make them change it. So regardless of who the president is on either side, because the more toxic and the more negative and like violent our policies become, the harder it becomes to actually get comprehensive immigration.
Of course.
We cannot let politics affect that. Like immigrants, undocumented immigrants, they all provide a service to this nation. Like, you have to be, I keep telling people, you have to be kind to undocumented immigrants, and in particular to immigrant and immigrant children, because they're going to be paying your social security checks tomorrow. Give me a break.
We get smart and then we're like, okay, never mind. You know?
Your question is, the truth is, the only positive change that I have seen in my lifetime have come from undocumented students that forced the federal government to do something about it. And we have to keep that up. We have to keep forcing our politicians to do something about it, because they always simply just play politics with our families and with our livelihoods.
That's crazy. I feel like that's been the same thing. You and I have the same feeling about the previous president. As much as I love a lot of the other things that they were able to do, this is one area, like immigration was one of the areas that every president just seems to be kind of just dropping the ball on purpose. And I always say this, para los Latinos out there, you got one party that's, you know, trying to swindle you, and another one that's not even paying attention to you. So you're not in a position to be sitting there playing favorites with any of them, because they're playing this crazy chess game with us. Y están ganando in some areas. But I do agree with you. I think it's our young community is the one that's going to make the stance on this. I'm going to ask one more question, because I know.
And it's going to start local. Like, the change happens locally. It happens at the state level.
Yeah, I think people need to start understanding that all change happens at a local or state level. 100%. Yeah, if you start worrying about from the federal aspect, it's just not going to get anywhere on there. At a very young age, you struggled with identity. It's something that we have a lot in our audience. We have a huge audience of like the 19 to 24 age, and they all are like a lot of first gens. Can you speak a little bit about that? Because even in the book, you say this is like the first time you found out that you weren't white. Okay. And we have that conversation going on into society now. What are your takes on that? Like, what do you say to somebody who is sitting there struggling with their identidad, you know, as a Latino here in the US?
The thing I like to point out is that to me, there is nothing more American than being Latino, because in Ecuador, I'm not Latino, I'm Ecuadorian. In Mexico, I'm not Latino, I'm Mexican. In Puerto Rico, in the Dominican Republic, wherever, I'm not Latino, I'm from those countries. But in the United States, I'm Latino.
I'm Latino.
That's why, to me, being Latino is uniquely American. Uniquely American. First and foremost, it took me forever to realize that. And second, I do believe as a culture, as a people, as a community, our identity is super young. Not only is like Latin America super young in the context of the world, but US Latino culture is super young. I mean, it wasn't until like the 70s and Nixon that we started actually doing the census for Hispanic, right? And when I think of Hollywood, especially like where I work in the entertainment industry, and I usually don't say this out loud, but you know, you're Rafael, I trust you.
well, you know, this is don't trust me. This is going live after a couple of days. So,
let me say this safely. I feel like we're kind of exiting the black exploitation phase of our era. If I can equate us to what the black community went through,
no, that makes complete sense. I think that's the perfect way of saying that.
And understanding like what our culture is, what our shared stories are. I think we're finally moving a little beyond the just traditional like immigration story or the traditional barrio story. And we're now getting elevated in our storytelling. I mean, the first thing I tell any young Latino, Latina writer is that please remember that Latino is not a genre. If you say, oh, I'm writing a Latino story, you've already failed. The genre is sci-fi. The genre is murder mystery. The genre is rom-com. Latinidad is just the icing on the cake. Latinidad is what makes your characters that much more special. But be careful that you're not thinking of our cultural identity as the genre of what you're exploring in your story.
I say that a lot because I know that we have people who are making movies, and then we have media companies that are literally putting us in a category specifically for that. Oh, we're advertising. This is a Latino story. And we obviously, we pick it up because we understand the value of the representation, kind of like what we did with Flaming Hot. Huge story. But I think what was important about Flaming Hot is that it wasn't a Latino. It was a story of a family and the struggle of a family here in the United States, a Latino in the United States. And I think if we sold our stories, not so much our Latinidad to the thing, I think that that's what makes it go cross culture.
I could not agree with you more.
You know what I'm saying? And I think that that's like what you say. I think we fail at that area where we're trying to make a story and we're trying to push, okay, hey, Latino, no, we're families. Like, we're humans. We have our culture. It's different from some other people, but we have our culture. We want to share it with you so that we could resonate, I guess, in a way,
you know, across the Spider-Verse did it so beautifully.
Oh,
big time. That Latino superhero. You just go, that's a superhero. Oh, Miles Morales just happens to be Latino too.
Yeah. It's insane. All right, man. Look, so the book is coming out on the 19th. It's Tuesday. What are your thoughts on what's next? Because I know you said you had upcoming projects. What is coming that we could get exclusive information?
Well, in the
here at the Wharfie.
On the TV side, it's unfortunate because, you know, there's a Hollywood strike right now. I'm on the picket lines. So that all of my projects are on pause. The great thing is that the Spanish language version of this book comes out, and that makes me happy because my abuelita has been waiting for it. So I'm excited to share it with her finally. And then the trade paperback version comes out July 11th. And then I got humble brag that the book did so well that my publisher wants a second book. So now I have to like start considering
what
the second book is. Yeah.
What do you think the concept's going to be on that one? Did you already think of that, or
I've been tackling an idea, but I can't share it just yet.
Can't share it. No, se lo roba. No, with these people.
But I will say this. It will star my abuelita.
Oh, that's cute. All right. There's a spinoff coming. there's a spinoff story coming, kind of like what they were trying to do with Free Ridge. All right. So if people wanted to buy the book, where would they go, Rafael?
They can go anywhere. If you want to support your local indie bookstores, that'd be great. If not, you can find it at Barnes & Nobles. You can find it at Target. You can find it at Amazon.
Y para usted, if they wanted to follow you, where would they go?
Oh, my brother. I'm just Rafael Agustin. I'm the only Rafael Agustin in Los Angeles. I'm Mr. MR because everything else was taken. Mr. Rafael Agustin on TikTok and like Instagram. I'm on TikTok, brother. We're like, why am I on TikTok?
Yeah, I can't get myself to go on TikTok. I tried it. It just doesn't work for me.
You know, like, I wasn't going to do it, but it was such a beautiful way to connect with people who want to find the book. Like the amount of people.
I agree with that.
On TikTok was phenomenal. So at first I was like, oh, I don't want to do it. Now I'm like so appreciative that I've been able to connect to a new audience through it.
Very cool. See, I at one point I'm going to have to dive in, but I can't dance. Stupid. So I don't know. Like, I don't know. For me, TikTok has always been the same.
Come on, man. You got to get your
All right, guys. This is Rafael Agustin. I'm Rafael. If you want to follow us, go to todowafi.com, todowafi on all of our channels. Make sure you go on Something Latino. I'm Something Latina. And we are out. Desde Nicaragua hasta Costa Rica, con esta canción todo mundo se identifica. Llamen a los chilenos y a los cubanos, llamen a Puerto Rico y a los mexicanos, que ya se armó la rumba. Desde Panamá hasta Ecuador, vámonos a Perú y luego hasta Salvador. Que se escuche en Brasil y Argentina. Yo quiero un grito de mi gente latina y levantaré mi bandera, estando en mi país o estando allá afuera. Porque para mí mira noches en fronteras.